Well, if you think about it, the mouth is basically the grapevine of the body.
I mean,
too true.
Wow. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to another awesome episode of the Wild Edible World podcast. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Michael.
And I am Steve. We got one of our good pals from the Instagrams here with us. Say hello to Mr. Biagio
DiSavo.
Hello, hello.
Nice to meet you, man. Thanks for being on the pod with us. You're a PhD scientist, and you live in Boston. You work as a scientist, but you're also a longtime forager, and that's primarily like our interaction with you, I think, and what your Instagram is mostly based around. So, yeah, just thanks for being on the show. We really, really love your stuff.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Yeah, I've been following your podcast for a while now, and I have even though I live in Boston and work in Boston, I have about an hour long commute to work.
Oh, wow.
So I get to listen to your podcast on Wednesdays.
That's awesome.
Wild Edible World, the commuters podcast.
That's right. That's us. I listen to our podcast on my way to work sometimes.
Yeah. So it definitely keeps me occupied. Love all the talks that you guys give.
Thank you. Yeah, awesome. Right before we started recording, we were bringing up your most recent video with the gnocchi and the garlic mustard, like pesto, right?
Yep. Yeah. Did that this weekend. You know, garlic mustard is an invasive species here in the U.S.
Oh, yes, it is. And
a lot of people posting videos to get rid of it. And, you know, garlic, to me, it has kind of a mild garlic taste. It doesn't have like a very strong, especially when you use it in a recipe. So I just threw it into some pesto. I didn't really make a traditional pesto with like pine nuts and Parmesan. I kind of just used what I had on hand and it came out pretty good. So
yeah, I think that's perfect. I think as long as you're like fooling around throwing garlic mustard in there, it's okay to let tradition go for just this once. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It looked delicious.
So, yeah, thanks. It was delicious. I was in a food coma for half
that's awesome. What was in the gnocchi themselves?
So the gnocchi was pumpkin based. So
I saw it was yellow or orange rather.
Yeah. And so actually just two ingredients, just pumpkin puree and, semolina flour.
Nice.
So
that's awesome. Yeah. That's all you need.
Yeah. Sometimes people add salt. I put a lot of salt in the cooking water. So it kind of gets its flavor, its salty flavor from there.
That's the way.
And then, I'm going to drop that video later this week. So you'll get to see how I made it in the process.
That's exciting.
Perfect. So you've got a lot. So you already know about like garlic mustard and stuff. You've been foraging for like a really long time. Do you have like a first memory from foraging?
Yeah. So I think my foraging memories are split into my first foraging memories are kind of split into two ways. I've been foraging with like family members since I was around 10 years old, maybe even earlier, but my first experience that I remember is probably when I was 10. My family is from Italy, so this one particular instant, I was in the Italian Alps with my great aunt and some family friends, and we foraged for porcini mushrooms, which are king boletes or edulis is their scientific name. Just cooking up risottos and pasta with that after. We also did some coral fungi and rucellas.
Nice.
What's interesting there is that we harvested a lot of red rucellas, which I don't know. You guys are out in the Midwest, in the Chicago area, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so I think there's some red rusulas here in in New England that are pretty toxic. So I tend to stay away from them here, but in Italy, I guess different species exist over there, and so my aunts would cook up these red rusulas and these pretty coral fungi. I'll
tell you what, man, that sounds awful.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, being in the Italian Alps hunting for porcini, that sounds terrible. I would hate that.
And you're right, we do have like a ton of rusula species, at least in the Chicago area.
Yeah.
Like there's tons, and they're definitely not a novice mushroom to be eating.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that we have any like terribly toxic ones, but we have ones that straight up just taste terrible or they're like belligerently spicy. I mean, like, that's one of the more modern ways to tell which rusulas you have, because they're so indistinguishable by color and surface and gills, is that you literally
does it taste like shit?
Yeah, put it in your mouth and spit it
just
out.
Just a little bit, you know?
Yeah, just a touch.
A little bit, just for a second.
Yeah. None of them will, or at least to my knowledge, they won't kill you if you taste test. So that makes sense. But I mean, there's some, there's a charcoal burner and then a green cracking mushroom, rusula, that I'm pretty confident in picking here. So the charcoal burner is kind of like a violet, purple color, and then the green cracking one is green. And I've had those taste like, I would say, pretty neutral, but they definitely don't taste bad. So I've definitely cooked those up.
Nice.
So you've been to Italy. But, were you born here?
Yeah, I was born in New York. I was born and raised in New York. But I was lucky enough to, a lot of my extended family lives in Italy, around Bologna. Which is like north central.
Mm-hmm.
And so got to spend a lot of summers there.
That's incredible. So
and
jealous.
So a lot of in the woods. And I guess that's what really probably influenced my foraging. I don't want to say lifestyle, but
kind
well,
of
sure, no, absolutely. The fact that there's like history to it, that your family has ties to it, and there's so much more of a culture of it in Europe, than there is in America. Do you experience that? Like, do you get people looking at you like you're crazy, like we do?
Oh, definitely. I would say most of my friends think I'm crazy.
That's awesome. So, tell them to listen to the podcast, Stepping
Dogs. Right?
I will. But my second intro to foraging, though, happened a little bit later in middle school. My science teacher, I think it was probably in seventh grade, brought in a forager who, I guess, did urban foraging in New York City. It's a shame that I really don't remember his name, but he brought us out onto the school lawn and showed us like a bunch of like whatever weeds were growing in. The one that I remember most from that was mullein.
Nice.
Cool.
And the, like, big soft leaves.
That was actually going to be my next question. Coming from Italy, or coming back from, you know, porcini hunting in Italy, like, is most of your foraging in the area, is it urban foraging, or do you get out to the countryside?
Mostly countryside. I don't, at least the parts of Boston where I guess frequent, I don't know that, like, it would be quite safe. Like, for example, I live in a neighborhood that's like from early 1800s, and who knows like what lead paint they used that might have fallen into the ground, which is kind of a shame because there's this huge mulberry tree or bush in front of my house, and I just like can't bring myself to pick them.
The mulberries are fine.
If only you knew a scientist that could test them.
Just don't eat the wood. The berries are fine.
Maybe this year I'll give it a go. But last year it just produced so many mulberries, and I just watched them all fall onto the pavement.
Oh my gosh. I'm sure there's a couple birds that took advantage.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Fucking love mulberries.
That's one of our favorites. Did you have a favorite from last year that you like can't wait to get back into this year?
Yeah, so I would say on the mushroom side, my favorite one, I have two favorite mushrooms that I picked last year. One would be yellowfoot chanterelles. Just found a spot this past year that like every week was spitting out like hundreds. Had like a great mushroom year last year. So that was, you know, I felt kind of bougie, like every meal that I would had a pile of chanterelles in it. But the other one was a painted suillus or painted bully, which is, I guess, in the bully general family of mushrooms. It's kind of, it's not, doesn't have like a huge, like distinctive flavor, but it was like this past summer, I found so many. It was like a perfect filler for like risotto, pasta, soups, everything.
That's
so,
that's actually what I was just going to say. Like boleets, I like them, but there's nothing, I've never, I don't think I've ever had one that I've been like, oh shit, that boleet.
Yeah. Right.
But it's a great filler.
Yeah, exactly. So just from like a sheer quantity of production, that was probably my favorite last year. And then in terms of plants, I'm going to go with either rose hips or crab apples.
Oh man, now you're speaking the language.
Yeah, so now obviously I have to bring up scrumping.
Yes, yes. Scrumpers United. Because,
yeah, so how does one become a scrump?
Oh, you already are, my friend. I mean...
I guess
you can really join the club by buying the t-shirt, but
that's the official test.
That's the official. Okay.
I guess the technical term is doing so without permission, not buying a t-shirt without permission. You can do that.
Yeah.
Anytime.
Through illicit means.
But going onto someone's property, or you know, I guess it doesn't necessarily need to be
or public property.
Yeah, without permission, and you know, laying down a tarp, shaking a few apples, and then absconding with said apples, then you're officially a scrumper, I do suppose.
Mm-hmm. Well, my mother, who is a lawyer, who is probably going to listen to this, will approve. But we just won't tell her.
Yeah, or you know what? You can just be like a kind scrumper and just knock on people's doors. I do it all the time.
I like to generalize scrumping as anybody that collects apples.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't think it necessarily has to be like a scrupulous activity.
Okay.
But yeah, a kind scrumper.
That one's for your mom.
A white hat scrumper.
Yeah, exactly.
Shout out, okay, moms. Cool.
Yeah, shout out to all the moms out there.
I'll consider me going apple picking in the fall in New England this fall.
Well, that's like a perfect area, right? Like New York, Boston, like you guys get
old
like apples all over.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in New York, and so every fall we would pretty much go apple picking. And then it's kind of like it's just like one of those fun fall activities.
Is this like orchards? Do you do wild apples? Do you find wild apples?
I do both. I found, yeah. So, I'll go to an orchard because there are just so many around here.
Yeah.
But I do have a couple of wild, trees, both in Massachusetts and in New York that, I like to frequent to, get some tasty crab apples.
Yeah, man.
Get that's your scrump on.
That's my favorite thing. I mean, the variety is just outrageous.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite named apple, Steve?
Ooh, I don't know.
I do.
Do you? What is
it? Yeah, it's kind of controversial.
What is it?
It's a Jonathan.
Oh, man.
I know.
What, is it controversial because it's so boring?
Well,
I'm just kidding. Yeah, I'm just talking shit.
I don't think it's boring. How about you, Biagio? Do you have a favorite apple?
So I would go with something like Honeycrisp, or
Basic.
So is Jonathan. Shut up.
I think there was one that I liked this past fall called something like Snapdragon.
Ooh, okay, yeah.
But I mean, I'm not super familiar with apple varieties as I should be, and especially with crab apples, I'm even less familiar with the varieties. Like,
oh,
I do know that they can vary in taste, size, color. Like, you can have every combination, and every seed produces its own unique variety.
Yeah, several varieties even. Right?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I do
apples
want
are so cool.
Branches of this crab apple tree that I found in the wild to try and propagate it, because it was just the apples were so delicious. I ended up making apple molasses.
Ooh, buddy, that sounds like a long, or that takes a long time, right?
Yeah. So the way, I mean, so I didn't, I guess, honestly, it's probably more like fermenting apples, but I called it apple molasses because it kind of gave the color and consistency. But basically, I took these crab apples and let them sit in brown sugar for like 3 months.
Oh, wow.
And it just drew all the moisture out, created this like golden brown liquid.
Mm-hmm.
And the shriveled apples actually also tasted really good. Like, nice. As just bite candy. They were kind of like candy cured little bites.
It sounds awesome.
It sounds amazing. Yeah.
I love apples so much. My favorite variety of apple is probably either the one by the Meyer on Boughton and Weber or the one by Caputo's on 111th and 59th.
Or the one across the street from where we recorded that was like peaches.
Oh, yeah. Those did taste like peaches.
We didn't get any last year.
We didn't. Last year was a sad year for that tree.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
So bring us to rose hips. So not a lot of people do too much with rose hips. What do you do with them?
A couple of things. So I first dry them for tea.
Hell yeah.
When I'm talking about rose hips, I'm talking about multiflora roses.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of like beach roses or rugosa roses around here as well. And I know people who make jam out of them. Shout out to Diana at Edible Excursions who does make a really nice jam and syrup out of them.
Okay.
Forager in the area. And we sometimes forage together, which is really fun. Trying to build a little foraging community out here.
What's up?
Yeah. I'm really jealous of you guys. Seem to have like such a great community out there. I see you all like on Instagram.
We just have really good friends. I don't know. The internet is a powerful thing. I wouldn't say we have too many, like the foraging network out here, specifically in our area, the Chicago suburbs, is kind of loose. Honestly, yeah. There's not too many people doing it together or personalities like us, even in Chicago, as big of a place as it is.
Huh. Well, it seems like you guys have an awesome time out there.
Well,
all together.
So. Yeah, of course. We're going to have a good time no matter what.
Yeah, this is true.
I'll look into Edible Excursions. She seems really cool.
Yeah, no, she's great. So I use the multiflora roses, and I'll make syrups out of them. Tea. I also did a mead or a honey wine out of them, as well.
Have you tried that
which
yet?
Is still, I've done, so it did its first, ferment, and now it's on the second ferment. I did taste, in between when I was switching out the container. And I will say, I don't think I used enough rose hips. So next year, I'm going to need to get more rose hips. But it still tasted really good.
How long do you think you're going to let it age?
At least 3 months, probably. I really want to see if like the flavors will really come out, but maybe even 6 months.
How much of it did you make? How many bottles do you think you'll get out?
Oh, no, just one. I did a really small batch.
Oh,
I only had about, like, I want to say 3/4 of a cup of rose hips left to do that.
Okay.
Yeah. So next year, collect more to make a bigger batch.
Here's something else. Now's the time to do with multiflora rose hips, or not rose hips, just the rose plant itself. This early in the spring, it's setting off its early buds. And you can make a really interesting kind of like black tea tasting. Sometimes Kate at Viridescence Candy says it tastes like there's some species that can taste like peach Snapple.
No way.
If you get like the leaves, the like budding leaves, they come out in these like bundles.
Sure.
And before that, they've spread out. You grab them, you pinch them, and you like bruise them up and let them ferment for like one day. And then dehydrate them, and then you brew it as a tea, and it, you get like some pretty tasty stuff. And I think defoliating invasive species like that is an interesting. I wouldn't necessarily call it a good method of control, but it's
Every little bit helps.
Yeah, right. Every little bit.
Yeah, that's something I know exactly what you're talking about, and they're just starting to break bud here in New England, so I might have to give it like a week before I could get like a decent sized bud, especially since it's getting cold again.
Yeah. Give it a whirl. I'd love to see your spin on it.
Yeah, no, that would be great. Definitely going to put that on the list of things to do this week. So
what else is on the list of things to do?
Well, I kind of want to make these herby scones with garlic mustard. What else did I put on there? Wild onions. Just kind of getting like a garlicky flavor. I really want to find ramps. I think it's a little bit too early to find ramps here. That's something that I've never found.
Ever?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah, I've never found ramps. And it's something that some of like my non-foraging friends have eaten.
Something they can recognize.
Yeah, so I definitely want to get a bunch of those if I can. And I am tempted. Do you know, I'm sure you know, the forage market?
Oh sure.
Yeah, I am. So they sell ramp bulbs, and I know that's like kind of cheating, but I'm so to get a few.
We'll just send you some.
Yeah, to transplant, or our buddy Jed at Drop Seed Ecology sells seeds. And a lot of people later on in the fall or at the end of springtime when the plants start going back into dormancy, that's also another really, really good time to transplant your plants.
And I know a dude with like 90 acres in Stockton, Illinois that that would absolutely be fine with us grabbing a few bulbs and sending them your way. So
that would be amazing.
Sure, no problem.
One forage flavor that I feel like a lot of people know, and I've never tasted it.
Well, we actually got to go pick a bunch for our returning
hot sauce.
Ramp hot sauce that was super, super popular and sold out. So while we're doing that, maybe we can go over there and get ramps from there. And
I'm gonna have to bottles. I think by the time I started listening to you guys, it might have been already sold out. I know you have like the persimmon one as well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which is
so
good.
Get a bottle.
I'm actually I'm while we're talking about this, I'm watching you make your ghost pepper hot sauce on Instagram. Look at this stuff; it looks beautiful. The color on that's outrageous.
Wow.
For whatever reason, I have kind of like a small plot. And by small plot, I mean like 1 foot by like 12 feet of land behind my apartment. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, last year, the only thing that really thrived were my ghost pepper plants. And so I had like 100 ghost peppers.
That's a lot of ghost peppers.
Yeah. For that one bottle, which I still have because I haven't finished it yet. Mm-hmm. I only used one pepper.
Yeah,
so
I saw
my
that.
Freezer, full of peppers.
what heat level did that reach? Like for that one pepper, what heat level, like 1 to 10, is that hot sauce?
I'm gonna say like a 7.
Oh, wow. That's pretty fucking hot, dude. That's a good size bottle. It's like a 16-ounce bottle or something.
Right. I like whenever I use it when I eat, I use maybe like a quarter of a teaspoon for like a full like bowl of pasta or something.
Nice.
That's hilarious.
So it's going a long way.
I love it.
Yeah.
Wowie, wow. We've got a new hot sauce for you.
It's so delicious.
It's spicy.
It's spicier for sure.
Spicier. It's called Harvest Moon, made with ghost peppers, American persimmons,
and spice bush berry.
It's going to be great. We also have t-shirts available. Brand new t-shirts.
The best t-shirts, I think.
Baseball tees.
Scrumpers United.
If you've collected apples, if you've collected fruit... You're
welcome
a
to the club.
Welcome to a club. You're a scrumper. So check out our merch store, wildedibleworldpod.myshopify.com. Wowie, wow.
Sigh.
What's wrong, buddy?
Well, I just realized this mushroom supplement I bought isn't actually made with mushrooms. It's made with something called myceliated grain.
Myceliated grain?
Oh, no.
I'm sorry to tell you, buddy, but myceliated grain is a sure sign of a poor-quality mushroom supplement.
Well, dang. I wanted mushrooms, not brown rice. What should I do?
Well, you should support a small-batch producer from right here in the Midwest, Keweenaw Apothecary.
Keweenaw Apothecary? Tell me more.
Keweenaw Apothecary specializes in high-quality mushroom extracts from Michigan, and they always use real mushrooms, never, never, never myceliated grain.
That sounds like exactly what I've been looking for. Where can I order?
Well, you can find them at keweenawapothecary.etsy.com. That's K-E-W-E-E-N-A-W apothecary.etsy.com. Be sure to read their many excellent reviews.
Thanks, buddy. I don't want no low-quality mushroom products from a factory. I want Keweenaw Apothecary.
Wowie, wow! So you've been hanging out with Edible Excursions. Do you have any other people in your area that inspire you or that are also foragers?
In my area, I haven't yet. I haven't yet met up with a few people. I know, like on the Instagram, I've definitely connected with a couple of people, and we just haven't met in person yet, but. There's, his name is escaping me, but I think his Instagram handle is Son of a Bear.
Oh, yeah, I know that guy.
His videos are really inspiring. And he does a lot of like survival, videos too. And so, there was one cool video that I saw a couple of months ago about club moss, that he did. Like the spores of club moss. I don't know if you know what club moss looks like, but it kind of has these, it looks like a small pine tree with these like yellow, they're sporangia. So they're these structures that hold spores. It's not a seed bearing plant, it makes spores, and the spores are flammable. So when they're dry, you can like tap the top of the club moss and then put a fire to it and it'll make like a flash of like fire. And so he did a video of that, which was really cool. And then like the next day I found some club moss and it was raining, so I couldn't try it, but so he does some really cool stuff. And then I just have a bunch of like through Instagram have like connected with a bunch of people across the country, which is really cool. Because for whatever reason growing up, I thought like, you know, coming back to the States and after foraging during the summer in Italy, and all my friends thinking I was weird for doing it. I thought like I was the only one until like Instagram came around, and obviously there's huge communities of people who forage here.
Yeah.
It's nice to connect with people who have similar interests, even if we are across the country too.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people in the online foraging community, and definitely the people that I've then by extension met in person, are like really grateful for the type of connectivity that social media provides when it comes to what is allegedly kind of a niche extracurricular activity, you know, or lifestyle.
I feel like not anymore, man. I mean,
it's kind of hard to realize that because of how much we are steeped in.
You're right.
You know, we are surrounded by it. We love it, and we're surrounded by it. So it's hard to tell. Like, yeah, still most people don't know who Alexis Nelson is.
Yeah, that's that's outrageous.
You know, or Sam Thayer. You know,
arguably more people don't know who Sam is.
Right.
Right.
Yeah,
and that's crazy because he's like the pantheon of of foraging.
Yeah, I'm getting T-shirts made with his name on it, and people are like, "Who this guy?" And I'm like, he's whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody knows. So
he. And I know he's not on Instagram, but he did do TikTok for a little bit.
Yeah, he's got very strong TikTok.
He still does it.
Yeah.
I'm not on TikTok, so I don't.
It's my Sam Thayer box. Like, that's the only reason I use TikTok. I don't post to it. I don't pay attention to it. I've had a few things go like minorly viral, but nothing like the squirrel meme on Wild Edible World podcast Instagram.
Is that squirrel meme a hit?
Almost.
That was a great.
Thank you. It was like 400 shares, and which is pretty impressive for a couple little guys like us.
Yeah, squirrel meme, fivaging.
Fivaging was good too.
Sorry, I'm an idiot.
It's hilarious. It's hilarious.
No, they were great.
Yeah, so,
I was just gonna say, like, I have, you know, Sam's books, and I use them as kind of like a gold standard.
Sure.
Oh, you and everybody, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's wild that people, I guess, don't really know who he is.
Yeah. Even if it has been like some of the most best-selling nature books in the American market. Whatever, ignorant can't, you know, can lead a horse to water, you know, but some of these people, sheesh. So you said your background as a PhD scientist is in plant pathology with grapevines. So is the grapevine mold, the one that like gets all gooey and drips and stuff when you damage a grapevine?
No, so I worked on a bacterial pathogen called Xylella fastidiosa, and that it's a bacterial disease of grapes, and basically leads to the grape's death after a growing season. It does a number of different things, but primarily it lives in the xylem of the plant, so in the water conducting vessels of the grapevine, and through a number of different factors basically causes these blockages in the grapevine, both directly and indirectly. And eventually you get these like drought-like symptoms that form on the leaves, and eventually the whole vines just start to die. And it's actually a huge problem in Italy right now.
Oh, shit.
Not infecting grapes in Italy, but infecting olives.
Oh.
So I don't know. You may have noticed that in recent months, the price of olive oil has gone way up. But I think it's in part due to Xylella, because it has been causing like widespread destruction of these like 1,000-year-old olive orchards. Or olive groves across Italy. So this bacterium, there are a number of different subspecies that infect different economically important crops. I particularly studied the one that infects grapevines. So
is it, wow. Is it like domestic and wild grapes, or is it, does it, differentiate so between the two?
Question. Yeah. That's a interesting question, because a lot of the native grapes are more resistant to xylella. And that's due to a number of different factors, but those grapes aren't culturally as revered in the winemaking industry,
sure.
as, you know, like some of the European varietals. So breaking those into the market of winemaking to have you know, better grape varietals has been a challenge. And it primarily really only is currently affecting Southern California, Northern California, in Napa and Sonoma. This isn't really a problem. So it's not like a devastating problem at the moment. But it did devastate the Southern California wineries in the late 1800s and then again in the 1990s. So
and
it has historically been a problem.
And it almost seems like it's like destined to become a problem eventually, because the whole thing with grapevines is that you're not coming up with like the newest grapevine. You
right.
know, it's all about exactly. the oldest grapevines, which
right.
are going to be, especially whenever you like monoculture them, it's like, yeah. It seems kind of like right. a recipe for disaster.
Right. And especially as, so the, another problem, that caused this sort of reemergence in the 1990s of this, pathogen, which causes what's called Pierce's disease of grapevine. So that's the name of the disease, is an invasive species of insect came along called the glassy-winged sharpshooter.
And badass name.
That is so sick, actually.
Yeah, glassy winged sharpshooter. Like that's
yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
No. It's also kind of like a pretty cool insect, but
they should probably give it a shittier name. You know,
like give it away a shittier name,
like big old fart head. You know, something like that. Like that's they're just like perpetuating this problem.
Yeah,
making it feel confident about itself and whatnot. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
So the one of the problems with this glassy-winged sharpshooter is that it can fly larger distances, and the big fear is that as, you know, the climate continues to change and you get warmer temperatures up north, in Northern California, the glassy-winged sharpshooter is going to make its way up into Napa and Sonoma and bring xylella,
cause
wreak havoc.
Shit. Yeah, that sounds... terrible.
Yeah, because there is currently no cure to the disease. So a lot of vineyards resort to insecticides to kill the vector, the insect vector, and what they call severe pruning, which is to get rid of as much as the infected tissue as they can with keeping the plant still alive.
Damn.
Oof.
Yeah.
That's got to be, yeah, that sounds like a ticking time bomb, man. That sounds awful.
Yeah.
I love wine so much.
Yeah, the same species, different subspecies, infects different plants too. So it can infect almonds, citrus, olive, coffee.
Oh no! Say it ain't so. Olives and coffee—that's like a staple in for me.
Yeah. So. I mean, there are other pathogens that are probably bigger issues for coffee, like coffee rusts, which fungus. But so this bacteria does a lot of damage across the board.
So do you have much experience foraging grapes?
I have a little bit. This past fall, I actually did some foraging in Vermont and came across a whole... bunch of ripe riverbank grapes.
Nice.
So I did forage those. I actually also took some cuttings to start propagating my own riverbank grapes.
Heck yeah, man.
How's that going?
I have shoots, so those are, that I'll have to plant them outside. They like they're not doing great in the Boston winter.
Sure,
shocking.
And I don't have quite greenhouse conditions in my my little apartment here. So, but they're alive, and I'm gonna put them outside when it starts getting much warmer.
Do you have any other like garden plans?
Yes. So I actually have this plan or challenge that I've talked to a bunch of other foragers about, but haven't made anything like official yet. I kind of want to do this thing where it already exists. So are you familiar with Homegrown and Hand Gathered, the account on Instagram?
Oh, hell yeah. I love that dude in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I think in Pittsburgh, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
So where they
try to last all winter off of food that they grow, exactly. And they forage, and he's Iranian and has like a lot of, I mean, just like the recipes alone that he uses, and then exactly. Yeah, they're so good.
Yeah. So my goal, and I'm setting this very tentatively, but I want to see it through, is to do, you know how like there's dry January, I kind of want to do like foraged / grown / fished January.
Okay.
So planning to do a big garden this summer, and seeing if I can grow enough and then also forage, supplement that with foraged goods to last all of January without going to the supermarket.
You're picking a tough month.
That's a lot of work, man. Yeah.
I know.
How about July?
I was thinking like, okay, what if I did like, you know, November after growing season, but then there's Thanksgiving and then you got all the holidays in December. So I'm just going to grow and preserve as much as I can. Get the ground running in January.
No, I think that's awesome. I think it's a cool challenge.
TFTI.
I would also maybe add like bartered, you know, so maybe some of the preserved goods. Yeah. Bartered. Try to get some.
I definitely barter for like
cheese or something.
Yeah. So, but yeah, so the goal is like if anyone listening to the podcast or if you guys are interested, I was thinking of like making some sort of like official, not official challenge that people can all do together.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I love it.
Yeah.
I have a baby coming in June, so I don't know if I can.
I mean, how they don't have to participate.
No, but how prepared I'll be able to get.
Yeah, you're like, hey, my 6-month-old isn't really down for this challenge.
They're not pulling their weight, man.
It's really hard to forage. milk.
Definitely fair,
but I love the inspiration. And I've been seeing a lot of similar stuff, like Clay's been doing Wild Food Wednesdays. Clay Bowers.
Oh really?
That's
yeah,
that us.
Yeah, he's trying to do Wild Food Wednesdays.
Good for him. I love it. Maybe. Love all this. Let's all do it.
Exactly.
But yeah, so that's pretty much that's what I'm planning for it to grow in the garden. It's a bunch of probably like corn, beans, a lot of high calorie.
Yes. I thought about doing this in, I think, July of like 2 years ago. And so I made like a, you know, comprehensive, not so comprehensive list of things that would be like high money or high caloric, you know, high nutrition items. And so I was looking for like the most like from seed to harvest vegetables and beans and whatnot. And so I definitely got pretty deep into that world for a little while. It didn't happen, but you know, I thought about it for a long time. So, you know,
I mean, the worst that's going to happen in my case is that I'll end up with a bunch of vegetables and preserved.
That's true. Yeah, that sounds awesome.
And if I don't make it all of January, it is what it is. So,
I'm looking,
which is like a great because even like 100 years ago, people were doing this to like live.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the whole ethos of this podcast was like, we've all always been doing this. And it's only up until recently that we haven't. And it's important that we bring this back into the social consciousness and talk about it and like share the stories and get people connected through it.
Right.
So, yeah. Kudos to you, man. And I'll be happy to participate in what way I can. I'll see how far I can get. Why not?
Yeah, I love it. I think it's great.
It'll be fun.
Is there anything else? You got any projects or anything that you're excited for in the future?
A couple of things coming down the line, I think. I'm sort of putting together a cookbook.
That's awesome.
Nice.
So incorporating, obviously, foraged ingredients. And so that's coming down the pipeline at some point. The January challenge is something that I'm like continuously thinking about because I definitely want to try and make it happen. So we're in the stages now of getting the garden together. I was going to go do that this weekend, start putting in the new beds and whatnot, but the weather, it was raining all day Saturday and then it froze on Sunday, so really work out. Yeah, and then trying to figure out I was recently listening to one of your podcasts with Alan Burgo about his like mission to look at like the legality or what's needed right now in with like the legal system about what's allowed and what's not allowed for foraging.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So I kind of started looking at that in Massachusetts. And it's surprisingly kind of like not really allowed here, but definitely not in the state parks. There are some areas where it is allowed to pick mushrooms and berries, but definitely starting to look into that. So that's kind of on the pipeline.
That's how it is in Illinois, man. It's incredibly restricted state, and that was part of the from what I remember, he was like, "Yeah, I don't want Minnesota to become like Illinois." No offense. Yeah. And we're like, no,
we understand, dude. Yeah.
So definitely starting to think about that a little bit more because I think bringing that to light in the public eye is probably a little important.
And there's a lot of conversation that needs to happen with the public in order to like get the perspective shift from like foragers don't destroy the land, and that when people care about this stuff because they want to eat it, I mean, just like that encourages any relationship with nature encourages conservation.
I think a lot of it's just ignorance, you know?
Well, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree. So definitely that's on the horizon. And then just cooking up whatever, it's about to be spring or it's starting to be spring now. So going to plan some recipes to cook up and share with everyone on Instagram. And that's pretty much the projects I have lined up.
Hell yeah. What's plug your Instagram for the lovely listeners?
Sure. It's Bees Cucina. So BSCUCINA. Basically translating to Biagio's kitchen. I pretty much post cooking videos and recipes. Last summer I posted like a handful of foraging, videos. Might do some more of those.
Yeah, you should definitely do more of those.
Oh yeah,
those
are
great.
Yeah, your hand pies and like the mushrooms you pick, you find some amazing specimens out there.
So definitely going to do more of those.
Awesome.
But Regina, and then I do have a TikTok, but I haven't posted on that in probably like close to a year. So I wouldn't follow that.
Go ahead and follow. whatever.
sure.
Definitely don't follow mine either, wink.
Yeah.
But it's been really good talking with Biagio. I hope we get, somehow run into each other, maybe at some of these
large conference foraging conferences, or if we somehow make it out to the East Coast, I mean?
Yeah, definitely. If you're ever out in on the East Coast or in the Boston area, you'll have to let me know.
Yeah, well, likewise for you in Chicago.
Yeah, so this has been great.
Yeah, I agree. Awesome, yeah, man. Talking to you. Definitely hope people check you out. Your content is like really impressive. The framing, the composition of it all is very skillful in and of itself. And then just like the recipes are mouthwatering. And then of course all the ingredients and the stories are wonderful and fascinating. So I can't wait to see what else you do. And yeah, cheers, man. Happy 2024. Hope it's a good one for you.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks, man. Right. Bye. Right.
Have a good one.
You too.
All right.
Biagio.
Biagio. What's his last name? I forget.
DeSavo.
DeSavo, man.
Gonna have to ask him. Gonna have to ask him how to spell that.
What a guy.
Yeah, that was cool. He's got less than 500 followers on Instagram. Real kind of low key flyer.
But his content, like.
That's like he's got like 50,000 follower content. Oh, for sure.
Yeah, it's beautiful. He does great work. Check him out. Mm-hmm. We love you guys.
Yeah. We got t-shirts coming down the vine. Really excited. Kind of a collaboration with Wade Fox of Fox Among Bears. He came up with a really good idea, and I said, "Hey."
Yeah, I have a way to make that
thing. I'm going to make those t-shirts. He said, okay. So we're going to sell them for the podcast. And hope you guys like them. Check out our hot sauce if you haven't checked out our persimmon spice bush hot sauce. Like the man Biagio said, check it out. It's delicious. We appreciate your support. And it goes pretty much back into the podcast. We got some microphones and stuff that we need when we're constantly upgrading our equipment and doing more cool stuff and buying cool stuff for our guests too, to like reward them for being here in person sometimes too. So most of the time the phone calls are usually free, but when people show up in person, we like to give them some stuff. So your support helps us accomplish that. And also support other cool people around us. So we are sponsoring a punk concert next week. The weekend of Easter, March 30th, we're going to be at Ramshackle Farm in McHenry, Illinois, or McHenry County. I think that's just a county. It's not a city. I don't know what city
there's
it is.
There's also a city.
Well, I don't think it's McHenry Squared. It's just, I'm not sure.
Just Ramshackle Farm.
Check it out. It's Transformation. We're happy to support those guys. They're a really cool farm doing cool stuff up in Northern Illinois, and should be a fun music time, and the money goes to good wholehearted people. We love our listeners. Thanks so much for hanging out with us and listening to us chat with Biagio.
We'll see you soon, folks.
See you soon. Wowie, wow. We've got a new hot sauce for you.
It's so delicious.
It's spicy.
It's spicier for sure.
Spicier. It's called Harvest Moon, made with ghost peppers, American persimmons,
and spice bush berry.
It's going to be great. We also have t-shirts available. Brand new t-shirts.
The best t-shirts, I think.
Baseball tees.
Scrumpers United.
If you've collected apples, if you've collected fruit, welcome to the club. You're a scrumper. So check out our merch store, wildedibleworldpod.myshopify.com. Wowie, wow.